අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සා නමෝ තස්සා භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සා නමෝ තස්සා භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සා.
Good morning, everyone. Today, we are going to discuss another new topic which was listed under the Sankata Paramattas, if you remember. So this topic is named as Anuppanna Dhammas. Anuppanna Dhammas are the realities that have not arisen yet, but which have the potency to arise, which have not arisen but have the potency to arise. So still till now we have discussed, if I briefed what I have done so far, we have discussed the natures of paramatta, ultimacy, something to be called an ultimate nature. Then we divided into two groups, the conditioned realities and the unconditioned realities. The group of unconditioned realities, we have the Nirvana, which we will be discussing in another few weeks. In the conditioned group, we had four categories, the Paramatta Dhammas, then we had Upadino Dhamma, Paramatta Jatika, and then Anuppanna Dhamma. So far we have finished expressing the characteristics of Paramatta Dhammas and also a brief explanation about what are those Paramatta Dhammas, the Chittas, Chetasikas and Rupas. And then the last 2 weeks, previous 2 weeks, we discussed respectively about the Upadino Dhammas and the Paramatta Jatikas. So if I go to the chart, give another reminder, like this is the Paramatta, the chart. Then it was divided into groups. Sankata Paramatta, then Asankata Paramatta. Then this was put into four categories: Paramatta Dhamma, number 2 was Uppadino Dhamma. Then Paramatta Jatika, finally Anuppanna Dhamma. Right, so we told that these are certain stages of some Paramatta Dhammas. Paramatta Dhammas, we had three groups: Chitta, the consciousness, Chetasika, mental factors, and rupa. Then Asankata Paramattas are fivefold, which we'll be discussing in future. Then other than these, we have Panyati. There are a list of few natures in between, which we'll be also discussing in recent future. So till now we have discussed about the natures of Paramatta, then we discuss about the natures of Sankata and Asankata. Sankata Paramatta is the other realities that need the support of another reality for their existence. Asankata Paramattas do not need such a support. Then under the Paramatta group, Sankata Paramatta group, we have four categories. Out of them, the most prominent is the Paramatta Dhammas, the realities that have arisen, that has the nature of arising together with some other realities. So then all these paramattas can be verified in terms of four functions, can be known intrinsically, can be some can be abandoned, some can be attained, and some can be developed. Then out of the paramatta dhammas, then we discuss the characteristic of paramatta dhammas in detail. Then what were the Uppadino Dhammas? Uppadino Dhammas are the resultant mentalities and materiality that are supposed to arise. That are supposed to arise as the karma. Their karma has gained an opportunity. After the karma gained the opportunity, the resultant consciousness, mental factors and the matter are considered as existing prior to their real coming into existence. Prior to their arising, they are considered still considered existing by the Buddha. So they were called the Uppadino Dhammas. Then the Paramatta Jatika were some potencies that we find within ourselves, like the potency for defilements, the potency of the karma to give a result. So such kind of natures were called Paramatta Jatikas. They have not arisen as separate entities, but they remain as a potency, a possibility for the arising. So now today we are going to focus about this Paramatta. So we have discussed all these in brief. Then today we are going to discuss about Anuppanna Dhammas. Anuppanna Dhammas are the non-arisen reality, the realities that have not arisen yet, but has the possibility of arising. So could arise, realities that could arise if the conditions prevail. So if we look into the chart, we also find that Uppadino Dhammas and Paramatta Jatikas also have such characteristics. Because Uppadino Dhamma are the realities that have not arisen yet, but the karma has gained the opportunity. Its karma has gained the opportunity. So they are also realities that are supposed to arise, that are bound to arise. They are very close to arise. But still, they haven't arisen yet. So therefore, these Uppadino Dhammas can also be called Anuppanna Dhammas. Can also be called Anuppanna Dhammas. Then about the Paramatta Jatikas. Paramatta Jatikas are just potencies. But still, they have a possibility of arising as Paramatta Dhammas, as separate entities. The Lobha, the latent craving, arises as a mental factor. So we don't distinguish this as two different layers, two different realities. So it is the same Lobha which remained as a latent force, arose as a mental factor. So therefore, considering about their arising, the nature of their arising, since that mental factor, the Lobha mental factor has not arisen yet, that Lobha can be considered as a non-arisen reality. Therefore, even Paramatta Jatikas can be put into this Anuppanna group. Paramatta Jatikas can be put into Anuppanna group. Especially these defilements, the Paramatta Jatika level ones, when we talk about the uneradicated defilements, we have three possible explanations. Anuppanna defilements, the defilements that have not arisen yet. Uppanna defilements, the defilements that are possible to arise, the potency to arise. Then the Anusaya defilements, the defilements that follows our mind stream seeking for an opportunity to arise. So we have three explanations about the uneradicated defilements within the literature. So they also fall, they can also be integrated with this Anuppanna term. So the Anuppanna Dhammas are the larger group. Uppadino Dhammas and Paramatta Jatikas can also fit into them, but it is that Anuppannas do have some other realities also. It is not only consisted with these two groups. It may also have whatever reality that has not arisen, whatever reality that has not arisen, and has the possibility of arising, that could arise, would fall into this group, Anuppanna Dhamma, the realities that have not arisen. And what is the specialty of this group, of these realities? Because when we are talking about a liberation, when you are talking about freedom from the suffering, the freedom we get, from what sort of suffering do we get freed? From what sort of suffering do we seek for a liberation? That is from the Anuppanna suffering. The suffering that has not arisen yet. So that's very important. This aspect of the realities are quite important when we understand the liberation and also about the Vipassana meditation. So the Paramatta Jatikas were necessary because we found them as a potency. That because of this potency, we are prone to get defiled again. We have a possibility that there is sort of a cause within us that produces the results in future. That means we have a cause for our rebirth. So this Paramatta Jatikas showed us, gave the sense that we are not fully, entirely freed from the suffering because the causes are still prevailing within us. So Paramatta Jatikas makes us aware that the seeds of suffering are within us. Seeds of suffering are within us. Uppadino Dhammas are quite special sort of realities. They talk about, they express about whenever a karma gains the opportunity the result is about to happen. So it's quite closer to the happening because the cause has already gained the opportunity to yield its results. So therefore, Upadino Dhammas are, we can find it in only like specific cases. But when we come to Paramattha Jatikas as human beings, we do find them within us. Even Arahants do have such Paramattha Jatikas. For example, the Vasana, the Asaya and so forth. Then the Anuppanna Dhammas gives us a sense about the suffering which is going to happen. About the suffering that we are bound with, we are going to face, encounter. So the release from the suffering, the liberation from the suffering is from these realities. What are these realities? Non-arisen reality. Non-arisen realities. Non-arisen. The realities that have not arisen yet, but could arise. That are possible to happen. Why is that? Because the causes prevail within them. What are these causes? Causes are found in this manner, normally. The defilements are latent within us. The karma is, the force is latent within us. So the Paramattha Jatikas, in most of the cases, I'm not saying it as an like a complete explanation. In most of the cases, Paramattha Jatikas gives a certain sense to us that the seeds of suffering, the causes of our suffering are within us latently. Even though we are not aware of that. Then the Anuppanna Dhammas gives us the sense that we are bound to experience lots of suffering if the future, if the causes still remain within us. So it's another kind of that we can look into our life. Now Paramattha Dhammas are the things that we experience in our life. And then the Paramattha Jatikas are the causes for the continuation of our suffering. I'm not saying that all Paramattha Jatikas are causes. The causes of our suffering are categorized under Paramattha Jatikas. So when we study the Paramattha Jatikas, especially the karma force and the latent defilements, we find that these causes are within us. Then Anuppanna Dhammas are what is going to happen due to these. If the causes remain uneradicated, what are the suffering realities that are going to happen? So we are going to have a discussion or explanation about these Anuppanna Dhammas. And also at the end of the lecture, we shall be discussing how relevant this aspect to our day-to-day life, especially in the Buddhist practice. And then we'll go to the normal diagram that we had. So now we'll go into the diagram. This is the birth. So the Chitta Chetasikas arise and pass away, our normal diagram. So then we consider this is the moment, present moment. So then this Chitta would pass away, Chitta Chetasikas, and some would continue to happen with the death. Then if the latent forces remain, what are the latent forces? Kamma. Then avijja and tanha. So when the support is given, they produce some results. So if we'll first draw the these are the Paramattha Jatikas. And also we have Vasana, Asaya and all these, a list of Paramattha Jatikas. But I'll just focus on these two. They are the most prominent in our day-to-day practice in terms of understanding the existence. Then if the karma, when a karma gets then, for instance, if this karma gets the opportunity here, then these realities, after they gain the opportunity, the realities that are going to happen, the resultant, we call Upadino. If you remember, Upadino Dhamma. These are the realities, resultant, that are going to happen out of a karma which gained the opportunity. So that was an specific case, like after the karma has gained the opportunity. So I'll not be focusing on that because we have already discussed about this. So now today's lesson, the Anuppanna Dhammas are about the realities that are possible to happen, because as long as we have not eradicated the defilements and the karmas, even though the karma has not gained the opportunity, even the karma has not yet gained the opportunity. For instance, if we think that our next life is still not destined or a certain karma has not gained the opportunity still. But still we have abundant of karmas, and also our defilements are still active. So that has made the karma fertile. It is capable of giving a rebirth. So though it has not gained the opportunity yet, we can still find there is a possibility that if the status remains as it is unchanged, the status remains as it is unchanged, it means if the defilements are not eradicated, the karma is still would become fertile, it would surely get the opportunity and give a result. So at this moment, the present moment, we consider this as the present moment. Right? I hope you can see it. The present moment. If this is the present moment, and then the Paramattha Jatikas still remain within us, what happens? There are some realities that are going to happen in future. I didn't use the word future because the future realities have a specific definition. So I'll just mention that the reality that are going to happen at the present moment, if this is the present moment and if this is the status our mind is in, these realities are not preventable. If we remove these causes, the realities that are going to happen after death will be removed. Some of the realities, the non-defiled realities, are still going to happen. That's why Arahant, after the Arahanthood, still going to live. Only the defilements are not going to happen. And also the defilement-born matters. Chitta, akusala chitta dirupas. So this is, now, before this, we had a birth. We had a life. So in this life, there was still avijja and tanha. It supported the karma. And when did that karma, the birth was given, the birth happened. So now what are the anuppanna dharma? These are the paramattha jatikas, we know that. These are the paramattha jatikas in the previous life. These are the paramattha jatikas we have today. These are the paramattha dhammas. Then, these are the paramattha jatikas. So what are the anuppanna dhammas? Anuppanna dhammas are all the realities that have not arisen yet, that are going to happen. Whatever. Maybe it's made out of karma, born out of karma, or whatever reason that is going to happen in future. These are called anuppanna dhammas. All are going to be called anuppanna dhammas. This reality, we don't call it anuppanna dhamma because though it has something like it will pass away in future, but it has already arisen. So we should not call it anuppanna dhamma. The reality that have arisen passed away, nothing to say about it. These are the reality that are going to happen. How? If the causes prevail. Few causes may. Now, I'm not going to say that all the causes of these realities are the karma and tanha. There are various causes. If you look into the handout, I have given an exhaustive categorization, like list of anuppanna dhammas. We can categorize them in some other order. So this is one order that I followed to get more clarity. So I'm not going to explain them in detail because it would only lead to some confusion if the listeners are not aware of the realities very well. So, but I have given a list for the ones who are interested in further studies and also to go into the depths of the teachings. So these are the anuppanna realities. So whatever reality that has not happened yet but is possible to happen is called a anuppanna dhamma, anuppanna reality, non-arisen reality. So now we see the upadino dhammas were taken out of the diagram. These are the paramattha dhammas, these are the paramattha jatikas, and these are the anuppanna dhammas. In a future lesson, most probably in the next or the next lesson, I will change the diagram slightly when the anagata realities comes into account. So this diagram will slightly change. This diagram I took, this categorizing naming was made for the easiness. Because in future, the naming would be slightly different when the present, past, future realities are put into this diagram. At that time, the Anuppanna Dhammas would come below. So then, what is the specialty of these Anuppanna Dhammas? How do we find this? This main sutta, the very prominent sutta that we find about these Anuppanna realities, existing realities, is the Nakasika Sutta. Nakasika Sutta. According to the Nakasika Sutta, Buddha took a lump of soil onto his nail and asked the monks, what is more larger, the soil on the entire earth or the soil remaining nail? The monk said that it is not something to be compared. It is obvious that the soil on the earth is much, much, in terms of the quantity, is much, much larger or higher than what is on the nail. So then the Buddha mentions, now this should be compared with the remnant and the eradicated suffering of a Sotapanna person, a person who has entered the first noble path, who has become the noble being for the first time. So a Sotapanna, the remnant suffering that he has to encounter within the seven lives in the samsara are like the soil on his nail when compared to the suffering he has eradicated, which is similar to the soil on the entire earth. So a Sotapanna is freed from a suffering, a mass of suffering that cannot be compared to what he has, compared to the suffering that he is supposed to encounter in the recent lives, in that very life and also in the recent life, still he attained the higher paths and fruition and also the Parinibbana. So therefore, in that sutra, he mentions about the suffering, two types of suffering. The suffering which has been, the Sotapanna has overcome, the suffering that he has gone beyond, and the remnant suffering. So what are these two types of suffering? The suffering that he eradicated and suffering that is remaining to him are mainly the suffering that is going to happen. So when he says he's freed from a suffering that is similar to the soil on the earth, while the remnant suffering is like the soil on his nail, he's referring to the suffering that is going to happen in future. It's not a suffering that has already happened. It's not about the suffering within this very life even. He's talking about the suffering that he would have encountered unless he didn't become a Sotapanna. If not, he became a Sotapanna, the suffering that he is going to encounter was considered as suffering. So this idea amounts to the idea that Buddha, about the suffering that is going, about the reality that is going to happen, if the conditions prevail, certain realities are going to happen. Those realities, prior to their arising, are considered as existing. They are not considered as not existing. They are not considered as not existing. So to our present mindset, I think the way we have got educated, something that is future, something that has not arisen yet, we do not tend to consider it as something that exists. It is something that has not arisen yet. But according to the Buddha's philosophy, it seems, it's very clear that the Buddha has considered the realities that are going to happen due to the prevailing of certain causes, he has considered it as something existing. Not in the sense of a reality that has arisen, but because the beings are bound with them, that those realities are going to happen. Because why the reason? The causes are prevailing. So as long as the causes are prevailing, the realities that are going to happen are considered existing prior to their arising. I'll repeat the statement again. As long as the causes prevail, causes are found, the effects, the realities which has not arisen yet, are considered existing prior to their arising, before their arising. So this is the main philosophical idea behind this the classification of Anuppanna realities. It may seem something weird, but when we deeply think about this point, because now if we think like if someone has to face a trial in his life, like go to the courts and face all the troubles, if someone has sued us or made a filed a case against us, so at that time we know that we are going to have some problems in recent few days. It may happen or it may not, but there is a possibility that we know, our mind can sense that we are not freed from, we are not free as before, because we have to face, go to the courts and face some problems. So there will be some unpleasant incidents which are going to happen in the court. So we know that it's going to be something effortful. So this, because when this suffering, this is something which is called the suffering which is going to happen, which we are going to encounter in recent future. So we know, we can feel that we are not free as before. So this suffering which is going to happen, which is about to arise, which we are supposed to encounter, do exist in some nature. Do exist means it's not something unreal. Someone can argue if he doesn't know, still he knows that he's not fully freed from that suffering. For instance, someone is diagnosed with a cancer to die in few days or few weeks or few months. The doctor may not say it to the patient. He may first say it to one of his beloved or trustful people. So now after a few days or when he's close to the death, maybe they will tell him, or sometimes they may not tell him. So he or she is not aware about her recent death, that which is going to happen, about to happen. But so she or he may be okay about it, but others do know that she's not freed from the suffering, and suffering is going to befall upon him or her very quickly. So being aware or not doesn't amount to the idea that he is freed from the suffering, as long as that suffering is actually going to happen. So that is why even sometimes we do not consider about the deaths and the aging and the diseases that we would face in future births. A person like Buddha, who can see the phenomenon, who has understood the phenomenon, knows that we are not freed from the entire cycle of suffering. So that's why he urged us to practice and get liberated fully. So therefore, even though we know it or not, even we are aware or not, if some suffering is actually going to happen as a phenomenon, we have to consider that suffering is still existing. In one way, that existing nature is, as long as the causes prevail, a certain reality is going to happen. So that reality is considered existing prior to its arising. So this is the main idea about the Anuppanna Dhammas. We can have various categories about these Anuppanna Dhammas, which I'm not going to discuss because it may lead for some confusion only. We can list them. And also the defilements that are going to happen. If these are not eradicated, some defilements would happen. These defilements are also considered non-arisen. The resultants, the births, because of karma, are considered not arisen. So in the Vipassana meditation, before we come to the Vipassana meditation, we'll find out something very practical about these Anuppanna realities. Avijja and Tanha, karma, then because of karma, everybody is going to happen. So now think, if someone becomes an arahant here, if someone becomes an arahant, attainment of arahanthood, talking about the Magga and Pala. If at this moment, if someone attains the arahanthood, what happens is, that moment, his avijja and tanha would be fully removed, and karma loses its ability to give a rebirth. So at that very moment, we do get liberated. From what? From what do we get liberated? Because at that moment, a very pure consciousness arises and eradicates the latent defilements. At that time, the mind is not occupied with defilements, but it removes the latent potencies for the akusala. Together with that removal, and also the making the karma infertile, what happens? We become freed from from all the suffering that we were supposed to encounter if this was not removed. If this was not removed, there was lots of suffering that was going to happen. We become freed from all those sufferings. So the liberation means not about something which has arisen. Liberation is not from something which has arisen. It is from something which has not arisen yet. So even in the aspect of nirvana, even in the aspect of attainment, this liberation we get, the liberation is found from the suffering that has not arisen yet. It's not the suffering that has already arisen. That is a very important aspect that we need to consider. In this sense, in this regard, that is mainly from the suffering after this death even. Because there are some anuppanna, non-arisen reality that are going to happen within this life till he lives, till Arahant lives. He gets liberated from the suffering that was going to happen after death. Because he cannot get freed from this particular death of this very life. He's getting released from the death from future countless lives. So therefore, in terms of nirvana also, anuppanna dhammas, the suffering that we get released are the anuppanna dhammas. At the level of uddhyabhaya jnana, the rising and falling, the wisdom of rising and falling is mainly tenfold. There are five types of rising and five types of passing away. The momentary arising and passing, or the coming from non-existent to existent and going into non-existent from existence, is just two aspects. So others are mainly about the continuation of suffering. So at the level of uddhyabhaya jnana, if we practice according to Theravada tradition, we find that there is a level that the yogi understands. As long as the tanha and avijja and karma prevails, that we are not freed from this suffering. That is the moment the yogi really gets the feeling of the non-arisen suffering and also the nature of a liberation. The nature of the liberation. Sometimes, otherwise, yogis may think that while they are meditating, they are seeking for an object called nirvana. Just looking into it, the defilements would be eradicated. This kind of, if we are seeking in such a manner, the liberation is never going to happen, according to Theravada tradition. That can be guaranteed. That is surely guaranteed. If we are seeking just for an object, like a nirvana, while we are meditating, observing the sankharas, we see an object called nirvana and the defilements will be removed, a yogi would never attain the nirvana because the real dispassion has not happened. First, we have to understand what nirvana is. For its liberation, to really have a willing for this attainment, which is called munchitu kamyata jnana, and also to get fully dispassionate about the sankhara, we first need to understand what nirvana is. Nirvana is the freedom from the suffering that was going to happen. So how do we understand it as a freedom? First, we have to know the suffering which is going to happen. We should have a sense about it. It's not like we have to look into the future lives with a psychic ability. No, we are not talking about that. The yogi has to have an understanding that because as long as the causes prevail, the suffering is going to happen. We all know about it. We all have a sense about it. I'm not talking about that very shallow sense. A yogi has to keep on contemplating on this matter. When he keeps on contemplating based on his understanding about the nama and rupa, that time he or she starts to feel the suffering that is going to happen, that he understands that he is not freed from that suffering. So that understanding about the future suffering, I may use the word future, but for the easiness of understanding, but it's not proper to use the word future. So the future suffering, the suffering which is going to happen, the yogi has to sense it. So that sense paves the path for the real wisdom of danger, the bhayatupattana jnana, the wisdom of danger, which comes at a later level of vipassana wisdom, vipassana development, is based on this understanding. Because the yogi knows there are lots of nama and rupa, not a self, nama and rupa is going to happen. Why? because the conditions, as long as the conditions prevail. So this nama and rupa would continue. He or she is very much aware of that. That awareness was gained by the wisdom of Udayabhaya Jnana, because he or she had to contemplate on this non-arisen suffering. So then it's like the yogi who has gone beyond this stage would always feel, regularly feel, that there is some kind of, now when we are supposed to face a certain trial in the courts, this idea always haunts us day and night. We always think about it because we know this is something that we are going to face. Because when we are going to face the examination next day, it doesn't make us comfortable. So likewise, a yogi who has contemplated on this anupanna suffering, he or she always starts to have the sense of danger, sense of fear that we are not free, that I'm not fully freed from this suffering. So his urge for vipassana automatically arises. And then he or she understand the liberation from this suffering is the nirvana. There are only two layers according to the Buddhist teachings. The layer means the continuation of nama and rupa, and the state which is freed from that nama and rupa. There is no third state. So when, likewise I explained in the first lecture, so when the continuation, if we consider this is the nama rupa of this life and these are the nama rupas of the lives that are going to happen, when someone attains arahanthood, these nama rupas would cease, and what would get manifested, what remains is the peaceful state, the nirvana. So that nirvana is the absence of the non-arisen suffering. So that understanding is necessary. Now, when this is completely opposite of the, sankata realities. So only when this understanding is there, a yogi gets the real dispassionate feeling, dispassion towards the sankhara. That is also very utterly necessary during the practice of vipassana. It has been instructed clearly in the Patisamvida Magga and its commentary that at the vipassana stages, when the yogi starts to see the rising and falling, and then sees the passing away, the bhangajnana, and then when from the moment he starts to experience the fear, starts to contemplate on the fear, he has to contemplate the blissfulness of nirvana. So blissful of nirvana, because he has not seen the nirvana yet, this idea about the nirvana, because he knows that there is a non-arisen suffering, and the liberation from that suffering is the nirvana, and he has to contemplate the benefits of that attainment. The reason is, now if you think about something logically, now we know at the moment of attainment, eradication of suffering, now I'm going to talk about something logic, why this understanding is necessary. Understanding of nirvana is necessary for the vipassana. And only when we know the anupanna natures, we are able to understand the nirvana correctly according to the Theravadians. So therefore, this is related to our practice. Now, a yogi, we know a noble being, eradicates the defilements in the four respective paths. We also know something based on the literature, that those path consciousness, noble paths, have nirvana as their object. If someone asks a question, argues, is it always necessary that the Magga Chitta observes nirvana for their eradication of defilements? Can't the Magga Chitta, the path consciousness, observe a sankhara, conditioned reality, instead of the unconditioned reality? Can't it observe the conditioned reality and still eradicate the defilements? The answer is no. It's not going to happen. Why is that? Only when a yogi have a direct experience about the unconditioned state, the defilement, the ignorance about the conditioned states would be removed. A nice simile given by a very learned Mahatera is, now someone is fed up with the land he is born into, like about the country, there's a lot of corruption, lots of civil war going on, robberies, unsafety, not proper food, not having proper food, no proper supply of water, and many, many defects in the country. So he's fed up with the country and he wants to move into another new country where all these problems are absent and also where he can live peacefully. Now, first he gets the information. So when he gets the information, he has an urge to go there. More and more he listens about this, the benefits of that country, his urge to go into that country increases. So then, but still, as that was the country, the worst, the bad place was the country where he was born in. So he doesn't, he also have an inherited attachment towards his birthplace. So it's normally they face a certain struggle, should I leave or not? That's natural for any person. So, but when he goes to the, I would call the paradise or the proper place, and observes that there are no such defects in that land, and that is freed from all those deficiencies. Then when he observes directly that this place is free from such adversities, that is the moment he decides, no, I will surely stay here. It's better not to go back. So that with that direct experience, he gives up the attachment towards his birthplace. And also during his before his departure, so when he had the urge, to gain the urge for departing, so he had to contemplate, he had to listen to the benefits of that new the country which he's going to reach. So likewise, that's why if we bring this analogy into the samsara and the nirvana, the vipassana practice, this conditioned reality, the mind matter and the mental factors have been our motherland. We have been born there. We have been living there for countless years, countless eons. So there is a strong attachment to this existence. It's not very easy to remove this. So we start to, because of when we study the Buddha's teaching, we start to see the defects of this nama and rupa. And we understand that it is not safe to be with them. But still there is inherited liking towards this nama and rupa. And then Buddha preaches that there is such a state which is called nirvana, which is freed from such sufferings. Then we keep on listening to these discourses, urge comes into within us, and then we start to directly see the defect, the impermanent suffering and non-self nature of this nama and rupa. At the same time, we understand, not just by listening, with the experience of the nama and rupa, he gets a more clear sense about what nirvana is. This clear sense of nirvana is not just knowledge. This is an understanding based on the direct experience about the nama and rupa. Because at this level, at the second stage of vipassana, he knows the cause and effect phenomenon, how the past and present and future lives happen. Because when we want to know the cause and effect, it's not only necessary now, for instance, a sound comes and the ear consciousness arises. This is a one part of cause and effect. But in the second stage, it's a must that the yogi understands how karma creates the new life. It should be a very correct, clear understanding. So how karma creates a new life, that is the second type of causal effect. So when he crosses the second stage of vipassana, he's aware how this continuation happens after death. So therefore, based on these direct experiences that he has gained with the vipassana, at a certain stage called Udayabhaya Jnana, he understands the non-arisen reality, the suffering that he is bound with, and also the liberation from that suffering. It's not just listening to a discourse. This understanding is based on the yogi's direct understanding. So that with that clarity, he starts to seize the defects of sankhara and also the benefits of nirvana. More he understands the benefits or the blissfulness, peace in nirvana, more he sees the suffering of nama and rupa. Only observing the suffering of nama and rupa is not necessary, is not sufficient for the eradication of defilement. That also is the same philosophy or the same idea behind the magga citta needing the support of nirvana, as taking it as a direct object to eradicate the defilement. The same phenomena has been adapted by the Theravadians in the Patisambhidha Magga, and also its commentary, that a yogi is supposed to is supposed to contemplate the benefits of nirvana with much clarity, starting from the bhayatupattana jnana as one level of vipassana wisdom. So therefore, the understanding of anuppanna realities, to understand that nirvana aspect, he should know first what is anuppanna reality, the realities that are going to happen as long as the causes prevail. And those realities are considered existing by the Buddha. And also when the yogi starts to contemplate, he or she starts to feel that they do exist in one manner. What is that manner? We are not freed from that. So that is very utterly necessary. The anuppanna aspect is very necessary for the proper functioning of vipassana meditation. We can observe the rising and falling and observe the nama and rupa, but it is not sufficient enough, to what I have understood, that for the progress, for the higher progress and for the final liberation, the attainment. Then another aspect of anuppanna dhammas that we experience in day-to-day life is the suppression of defilements. The suppression of defilements. So now sometimes we get anger, for instance, if you think the anger thoughts arise, I'll draw it in red color. Anger arises. Now if you are here, for instance, we are here, anger is going. Now it shows that if you don't have the wise attention, anger is going to continue. It may continue for some time. So the wise person, due to getting some advice or proper contemplation, may get the wise attention and then at some point would arouse certain wholesome thoughts or loving kindness toward that person whom he had the anger, for instance. Now think, he started to gain loving kindness. This is anger. So we know when we develop loving kindness, we do say that I was able to suppress my anger. When we develop loving kindness, we were able to suppress our anger. So we do so, they say that, and also the Buddha has advocated this. Now if we look into the Abhidhamma perspective, we find, even in Sutta perspectives, whatever, the Theravada perspective, we find that when the loving kindness thought occurred, the first thought of loving kindness occurred, the anger has already passed away. There is no anger, because there cannot be two consciousness at the same time. It's obvious fact. It's a very basic fundamental in the Theravadins, among the Theravadins. So arousing loving kindness means there is no anger. So we do say that by arousing loving kindness, we suppress the anger. So what sort of anger that we have already suppressed? Because there is no necessity. Now if a thought of anger arises, it's its natural course that it passes away immediately. Because there is no reality that is going to last for a longer period. They are always momentary. So they arise and pass away. That's a natural thing. And also while the thought has occurred, the anger has occurred, there's no possibility that we can interrupt this in between, before it's passing away. Now it's the if anger thought arises, we cannot interrupt this with another mind and stop it before it passes away. So only after it has passed away, there's an opportunity for another consciousness to happen. There's a possibility of another consciousness to happen. So now when this consciousness has occurred, the last anger has passed. But we know and we feel, and the Buddha also has explained that developing loving kindness, you can get rid of the anger. So when the anger arises, quickly starts to move to a good object, starts to contemplate wisely. So what is the anger that we have suppressed? Is it the anger that has already passed away? There's no need of such suppression. We know that the latent anger is there. The latent anger. So with the wise contemplation and also the loving kindness, what we do is we put an effect on this latent anger. We suppress it. So when this latent anger is suppressed, the anger that would have arisen if the loving kindness was not aroused, I'll repeat again, With the loving kindness, the latent anger is suppressed. And then, with this suppression, the anger that have not arisen but was supposed to arise, had not the loving kindness was aroused. That is the anger that we get freed from. We suppress the latent anger and we are freed from the anger that would have happened. It means, if the loving kindness was not aroused, that anger would have prevailed. So this was the advice or the wise attention, the effect of wise attention or the support given by a Kalyanamitta or a good friend. So the loving kindness was brought in this place. So we became freed from anger. Yes, what is the anger we suppressed? The latent anger. That is obvious. From which anger we got freed? That is the anger which was going to happen if the loving kindness was not developed. If not developed, this would keep on happening. We know that. If loving kindness was not there, that was the realm of anger that would have continued. More and more anger thoughts would have happened. But since the loving kindness was developed, the anger, because at this moment, if you focus on this moment, that anger has not arisen. It's not that we get rid of the anger that has arisen. The anger that has not arisen was supposed to happen. When this anger occurred, we become freed from those anger. And this latent anger is suppressed as a result. As a result, we become freed from this. So therefore, even in day-to-day life, when we suppress our defilements, maybe the fear, anger, or attachment, whatever it is. Another nice example, someone is walking in night towards some place, and a pole in the night time, the pole got manifested as a demon from far away. So the person was shocked or afraid, and he was not bold enough to walk by, because he thought that's a demon who is waiting to kill him. So he threads forward few steps and retards back and goes forth and comes back. And he was struggling to move from that place. So the fear was arising within him. It was going down. Again, it starts to arise. So he was in a struggle whether I should pass by this suspected demon. So fortunately, someone passed by with a torch in his hand. So with that light, he saw that it's not a demon, but just a mere pole. So with this understanding, with this vision, the fear completely was removed. Completely got vanished. So what was the fear he got freed from? Because when he is observing the light, there was no fear in it, because only the eye consciousness happened. So the fear which constantly threatened him or frightened him, was a momentary thing, it arises, passes away, again a fear arises, passes away, it happens in generation. So when he's observing the light, there was no fear in his mind in terms of momentary mind moments. So with the understanding what happens, the fear is not going to happen again. So he got freed from the fear that would have arisen if the person had not walked by with a torch. So therefore, the liberation explained in the Buddhist teachings is always related to these non-arisen realities, anuppanna realities. We cannot get liberated from a suffering that has already happened. Happened means occurred, have arisen. For instance, another example, we have a sickness. So our body is suffering with pain. So pain is momentarily. So it arises momentarily, arises, passes away, arises and passes away. We know that it may remain for few months or few weeks or few days. It may torture us. But now the doctor predicts that if you don't take the medicine, you are going to suffer for few weeks. So taking the advice, I took my pills, took the medicine. So what happens? when the medicine started to get activated within my body, it starts to show its effects. So pain has arisen, and still now the pain was momentary. It kept on arising and passing, but it kept on in a generation, and that generation is predicted to continue for 1 week if the medicine is not taken. So when the medicine was taken, the causes were removed. I got released from the pain. From which pain I got released? Is it the last pain which before the medicine showed its effect, the last pain arose and passed away? Did I got released from that medicine because then the medicine showed its effect? No. I do not need to get released from that because that pain I already experienced. A suffering that has already been experienced, we cannot get rid of the suffering. That is a suffering that vanished having experienced. So it's not a liberation. It's the nature of the world that something we experience naturally passes away. So it passed away. Now the medicine effects, pain is not going to happen anymore. So we got liberated. We know that we got liberated. From which suffering did we get liberated? That is the suffering which was going to happen unless the medicine was. So therefore, the aspect of Anuppanna Dhammas are very prominent, important in the Buddhist teachings, understanding the Buddhist teachings correctly. And also, we understand it's very relevant to our practice, and also it gives us widens our scope about our day-to-day practice and also about the Vipassana practice, and especially understanding the Nirvana. So this will be the lecture. So by attaining certain, I think I have covered almost everything which was written in the handout. So these Anuppanna realities, we do not call them Anagata, because when considering about their potency, we just call them Anuppanna realities. So next week, I'll be discussing about some overall idea about these three types of natures. Uppadino Dhamma, Paramatta Jatika, Anuppanna Dhamma. Because most of the listeners, they may be new terminology. So I'll be discussing some characteristics shared by all these three types of realities, and also have some explanation about the future realities, how the future realities fit into this category. So the diagram may slightly change, and then after that we can move on to the unconditioned realities and go to the next other topics in this lesson. So I would conclude the lecture.
Sadhu, thank you so much, Pante. So hello everyone, so if you have any questions, you can raise your hand, or you can put your question in the chat box. Thank you. Good morning, Pante. I have a question, but I'm not sure whether or not you are going to explain it next week, because you said that next week you are going to explain the characteristic of these three things, Pramatanjatika, Upanino Dhamma, and Anuppanna Dhamma. Mm-hmm. But still, this is the question, Pante. Because earlier you said that Upadino Dhamma and Pramatajatika can be considered as subsets of Anuppanna Dhamma, right? And I have some difficulty understanding that statement, because according to my understanding is that Pramatajatika is kind of causes, right? And Upadino Dhamma like results. So how are we going to put two of them into the same category in the Anuppanna Dhamma? Because it looks to me that Anuppanna Dhamma are also results. So could you please explain it a little bit more?
So is it like, how about Upadino Dhamma putting into Anuppanna, is it also seems controversial? Upadino Dhamma putting into the Anuppanna group?
I think that should be okay, but okay. It's just because the Pramatajatika. Pramatajatika is like causes. Yeah. Because we say that Anuppanna Dhamma is non-arisen realities.
Yeah.
But then we know that Kamma Sati is Pramatajatika, and Kamma Sati is not going to arise anymore, right? Mm. We cannot say Kamma Sati as non-arisen realities. So that's why I have a little bit difficulty understanding that.
Yeah, so that statement that I'm saying Anuppanna Dhamma is the bigger group, and the Paramatta Jatika and also Upadino are in the bigger, the larger group. Now, the controversial point is this. I think Upadino Dhamma is quite understandable to put in. The Paramattha Jatikas. Paramattha Jatikas, we exclusively focused on this, the potential natures. But the thing is, if we just focus on the potency, if we just focus on the potency, you are correct, we should not put them into the Anupana group. That's correct. Because they are just potency, they are the causes. But the thing is, when we come to the literature, for instance, the latent lobha and the latent kamma force. Right? So now the latent lobha arises as a lobha chetasika. Latent kamma arises as a vipaka. Right? As a vipaka. Now here, if we focus on this, we also know that we are not going to separate them as two separate realities. So we also mentioned that it is the same latent lobha which arose as a chetasika, so we take them as one thing. So then when we call something this as a paramattha jatika, in our lessons we just focused on this aspect. On this aspect. But the non-arisen, I'm not talking about the lobha which has in the paramattha paramattha dhamma sense, the non-arisen lobha. So the word, now when we talk about, within the literature, the word paramattha jatika, that is the point that I had to adapt this respect in the literature. In the literature, the paramattha jatika covers, like, I cannot completely put this away and only call this an anupanna reality. We could have done it. Paramattha jatika is here and anupanna is here. Right? So then what happens? Now this is the latent anusaya. Right? This is anupanna. So we can call anupanna lobha, anusaya lobha. Right? So what we see in the literature is this anusaya lobha and the anupanna lobha have been made same within the literature. Within the literature. So that is why I said that because I don't have a right to remove it completely, because when you go into the literature, you find the anusaya lobha and anupanna lobha are the same things that they have referred. The reason is because they do not draw this line. They do not draw this line. In the lectures, I did draw the line and explain them separately for the easiness. I separated them and said paramattha jatika, the latent force, not the recent force, for the easiness of understanding. But when I put them into a broader category, when I go into the literature, to face the literature, I do encounter a problem that if I draw this line and say this is only paramattha jatika and this is only anupanna, because in the literature we find anusaya lobha and anupanna lobha have been mentioned as identical. So that was the reason. Otherwise, it's a very good question, and it's something that we have to raise this question, that how could these two be the same? So therefore, respecting these statements that I adapted. So if I just focus on the anusaya level, you are correct. I cannot put it in the anupanna group. Focusing on this anupanna lobha aspect, as in the literature they have been mentioned identical, I adapted this paramattha. So we can say if we focus only on the latent paramattha jatika, it should go apart from the anupanna group. Then we go into the kamma, this kamma. So we normally say that is also that can lead to another long discussion, which I'll also not be able to explain completely. According to the literature, kamma has four stages. kamma, then the kamma sati. Kamma sati is kamma samangita, we normally say. Then upatthana samangita. Then the vipaka. So these are the four stages. So this seems very unrealistic, like very strange. Because we know vipaka is a separate mentality, separate chetasika or chitta. Kamma is a separate chitta. We know this is kusala or akusala. This is vipaka. This is separate chitta. We count them as separate reality. But according to the commentaries, it is the fourth stage of karma. It was not taken as a completely a separate reality. It is not taken as a completely separate reality. Though we count vipaka chittas as 36, we go into the literature, we find they are another stage or stage of the karma itself. It's the fourth stage of karma. It's not a new outcome of the karma. It's a stage of the karma. So that's why respecting these kind of usages that I said that anuppanna dhamma covers the entire range. So I'll try to give more details or explanation about this in the next lecture when we are talking about this. I'll come to that point. As you said, I wanted to give the answer because we can have a discussion in two stages. So this will be the answer that I would like to offer at this moment, a brief one. So in the next lecture, when we talk about these all three together with the future realities, we'll have more discussion about this, and we can also extend our lecture discussion further. So this is the reason, as you said, if we focus on the potency, you are correct, we cannot put it into the Anuppanna group. But within the literature, as we find that these are identical, and also vipaka itself as the fourth stage of karma, not as a separate reality. So that's why I adapted this, said that this is a subsect of anuppanna dhamma, respecting those information.
Thank you so much, Pante. Yeah, of course, I would love to hear more about this, because it's going to be it takes some time to digest, because then according to what you said, the vipaka is like a different stage of karma. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much, Pante.
I have a question. I don't know whether it's really related to this one, but you know, when you were mentioning earlier that angry thoughts, to overcome you have to have loving kindness thoughts. Mm-hmm. But is it the only way that we can overcome angry thoughts, Pante? Like, for example, by being just aware of what is happening in you, you can overcome still, right? Is it?
Yes, yes, truly, truly. So there are many ways that the defilements can be overcome. There are many ways the defilements can be overcome. So one, the most prominent and the most commonly known is that we developed a completely opposite quality within the mind. If anger comes, we develop loving kindness. If loba comes, lust comes, we develop the asubha. If the greediness comes, we develop giving, charity. So this is called suppressing the defilements by developing fully opposing wholesome qualities. Then in the other aspect, like it also mentioned in Visuddhimagga, it's not that it's not that the anger cannot be suppressed by asubha. It can be suppressed, but not in the level by loving kindness. So at the same time, lust is mostly suppressed by the asubha bhavana, but it is not that the loving kindness, not that the lust cannot be suppressed by loving kindness. It can be suppressed. So there is no kusala that does not suppress any unwholesome quality. So it's not necessarily that it's always loving kindness for anger. And then, as you said, when you are aware of the anger, it also naturally passes away, because then the wisdom is arose. So we are developing wisdom. We know that this anger, and the behind this understanding, the understanding that this is not a useful or helpful state. So that understanding surely suppresses defilements. And then we go into the Vitakka Santhana Sutta in Majjhima Nikaya. Buddha has mentioned in some cases, if the defilements does not go away, go and do something else. Just change the object. For example, a monk, if the lust or some unwholesome thoughts are disturbing while meditation, he is supposed to stop the meditation and go do some sweeping of the monastery. Or do some sewing of a robe for a layperson. He or she can start to cook or start to do some sewing or start some other work, start to read a book. So with that aspect also, the defilements can be suppressed. This is advice given by the Buddha in Visakha Santana. And if it cannot be suppressed even in that manner, he mentioned that make an effort on your body, like press your tongue above the palate and then press it and determine that I would not let this defilement to overcome me. Like we give a complete attention to our body and make a effortful determination that I would not let this happen. So all these ways the defilements can be suppressed. It's not only the loving kindness. Yes.
But thank you. And one other thing. Now, this Anuppanna Dhamma, the composition of that can change, right? I mean, because it changes with what you do now and in the future as well. So, how come Buddha knew the future lives? I mean, you know, he could predict someone's future life. How can it be done when these things are changing every time at the present moment also?
Anuppanna Dhamma, when it arises as a reality, it becomes a Paramattha Dhamma. The composition may change, as you said. It's perfectly correct. The composition may change. Today, for example, if I keep on continuing in this level, I would end up in this level, but if I change my practice, I may end up in a higher level. If I reduce my practice, I may end up in a lower level. Buddha has already mentioned this in many places. If the Mahadana Setti, the rich merchant, had he practiced, he would have been Arahant. Had he used his time to invest money into his companies, made investments, he would have end up in a rich merchant. But now he is a beggar, and he would surely end up in the hells, he mentioned. So likewise, the Anuppanna Dhamma, the compositions surely do change. And then you brought a very sensitive at the same time profound topic: how to know into the future. If the Anuppanna Dhammas are the possibilities, the probabilities, and the future reality. Now today Anuppanna would have been this, but later, because of some conditions, it would have occurred in another way. So in such a scenario, how could the Buddha see the future? So personally, if the Buddha can see everything as it is going to happen in every future lives, like count regardless of any time limitation, if he could see, everything would become determined, and there is nothing for us to do. So then the Buddhism falls into determinism. So what I understand is now, and also according to the literature, there are certain instances where the Buddha has had predicted about the future. So the only option we are left with is now there is some certain future. Like for instance, when the Bodhisattva met the Dipankara Buddha at the proclamation, he said this person would surely be a Buddha in Sunday. Now if someone asked the question, could the Dipankara Buddha see the entire scope of his practice, and that he would do this and this throughout his entire journey, and this is how he would end up? I personally think cannot. If he could, it's like everything is determined already. So what he saw was this seed, the potency that he has developed already, surely he would end up being a Buddha. But I'm not sure whether the Dipankara Buddha could say everything in between this. So likewise, in some occasions, our Gautama Buddha has mentioned this Korakkattiya is going to die in 7 days and he will be born there, because he knew the Upadino Dhammas, the Kamma has made the opportunity, gained the opportunity, now it's unpreventable. So he's going to die within 7 days. So when he saw that certainty, he mentions, yes, this person is going to die within 7 days. No one can stop it. When Yashodhara's father obstructed the Buddha's path, journey, he mentioned, this person is going to die within 7 days, end up in the hells. Because he knew that karma, the gravity of that karma, it had gained the opportunity obstructing a Buddha, and even the Buddha himself cannot help him to prevent it. So he'll surely end up in the hells. So likewise, only when the future is fixed, because of the fixed causes, strongly fixed causes, a person like Buddha would predict that this is going to happen. In other cases, what we see when we read the discourses, what we have said is, if you practice properly, you will end up in a good goal destination. If you do not practice, you will end up in a bad destination. So it happens that if the conditions are not very strongly fixed, future is not fixed, it's fragile. So Buddha knows anything is possible. So, but he would know that what is more probable. So there is a 60% probability that he would end up being a Sotapanna or a Sakadagami. But there is a 40%, 20% that he may end up in a Sotapanna, and there is a very less than 5%. Still, he could end up in a Putujana. So in such a cases, he knows that all the probabilities. So then he would advise, he would try to urge this person to keep on practicing. So likewise, I personally think when looking into the future, if the future is fixed, because the causes are well, very much fixed, he would predict. In other cases, he would say, all these are possible. If he practices in this manner, he would end up here. If he practices in this manner, he would end up here. He is able to see his practices. So that is one of his wisdoms, that he could predict where a being would end based on the intensity of his practice. To conclude the answer, now before the Dipankara Buddha, there were some Buddhas according to our literature, like there were countless Buddhas, but within that same eon, Tanhankara, Medhankara and Saranankara, three Buddhas were there. And there are some stories that our Bodhisattva met them. There are some stories, but I'm not sure how to guarantee the authenticity. So if they have met them, they would also have seen that this is a very special person who has been practicing to become a Buddha for a longer period, because Buddha would never give a prophecy to a certain being who comes who just appears from nowhere. He had to have developed practice for the Buddhahood for a longer period. So that those previous Buddhas, even though he met them, they knew that there's a very high probability that they would get a prophecy, he would be prophesied by a very recent Buddha. But still, there was maybe a 10% or 5%, maybe even a 1% of a possibility that he may get out. So I personally think only when it is surely 100% fixed, a Buddha would predict that this would happen, this and this would happen. So that is how I would explain looking into the future, but this is one of my personal opinions, and I'm not in a hasty to confirm that. So this is how I would explain, not falling into the determinism and also not falling into entire randomism. So that is how would I explain.
Okay, Bhante. I mean, basically, I think the current trends, I mean, he may be analyzing how strong he is currently, and then probably he has some kind of a vision to see what's happening in the future. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Bhante. Sorry.
I also have one question, but I'm sure that you are going to talk about this when we go to the Asaṅkhata Dhammas. But because earlier you said that during the course of practice of Vipassana meditation, the yogi has to contemplate on the benefits of the Nibbana. Uh-huh. And if I remember correctly, then you said something like, that is the absence of suffering. That is the what that he has to contemplate on. But it looks to me that when we say it is the absence of suffering, then it's kind of panitti, because it's the absence of something. So and then we also know that at this stage the yogi cannot take the real Nibbana yet. So does that mean that he's taking the panyati version of the Nibbana at this time, Pandit?
Yeah, now in the question we had two types of panyati, just the mere absence of suffering as a panyati and Nibbana as a panyati, right? So in second panyati aspect, like when the yogi contemplates the benefits of nirvana. It's like when a putujana contemplates the upasamanusati. At that time, his object is a panyati actually. It's an idea, panyati about a reality. So, Venerable Lady Sayadaw says the such panyatis are also very blissful and they are very beneficial. So, at that level, as you said, putujana become trying to become a sotapanna would contemplate the benefits of nirvana, taking nirvana as a panyati. But when a sotapanna practicing to be a sakadagami, he could contemplate the benefits of nirvana as a direct object because he has already seen the nirvana. So, yeah, in that putujana coming to a sotapanna level, yeah, it's a panyati. But that panyati, the idea of that panyati is more clearer than the idea of nirvana. The panyati, nirvana panyati, the idea of nirvana panyati is more clearer than a person, than a normal person who had not reached that level, that who has not understand the anuppanna, indu, dhyabhayana level. Then the next aspect, like absence of suffering as a panyati, yes, that I will be discussing in the asankata chapter, because when we are talking about the absence, the nirvana, there are a few ways that we have to explain nirvana. Nirvana as a completely separate state from suffering, and also the non-arising or the absence of suffering. And then when we talk about the absence of suffering, we have two aspects, the mere panyati absence and the nirvana, which is the absence of suffering. There are two aspects. Then the eradication of defilements also. The eradication itself is considered as a nirvana in one place, in some places. And then the eradication is considered as a one kind of act. Then the absence of the defilements is another thing. Absence of defilements also considered as the nirvana itself within the literature. And also sometimes the absence of defilements is considered as a mere absence of defilements like panyati. So likewise, we have 6-7 aspects that we have to look into when we understand the unconditioned nature clearly. I'll try to go in as much as possible in the lectures of the unconditioned reality.
Because I remember, for example, when we learn about the amoha, for example, aloba, adosa, amoha, we say that they are the real realities. They are not just the absence of loba, dosa, moha, because the absence is just the panyati. So that's why it is the current understanding that I have right now.
We'll discuss on this matter, because here we start with a sutra Buddha gave, like he advocates only two states, the dukkha and dukkha nirodha. So likewise we'll try to understand that. I'll try to explain it in the asankata chapter, asankata lesson.
Okay. Thank you, Bhante. You mentioned earlier, you know, we have to experience nirvana. Something like that. So how do you experience nirvana? I mean, I have some experiences, like for example, when you are in a meditative situation and the peace that you get in your mind, you know, and all that. So is that the one that you mentioned? Like, how do you experience the bliss of nirvana while in this life? At least momentarily.
It's like this. We have 5 types of nirvana, according to our literature. So getting rid of some defilements momentarily during our practice is also one kind of a nirvana. We either put it into tadanga nirvana or vishkamana nirvana. So we do understand it as a peace or an unconditioned state. So that the nirvana I was talking here was the nisarana and samuccheda nirvana, by attaining which the defilements would not come again. Now, for instance, if by attaining sotapannahood, the sakkayaditti is completely removed, that skeptical doubt is removed, they are not going to come again in the entire samsara, as long as he remains in the samsara. So how do we experience the nirvana? That I can only give some theoretical explanations on that. It's like the basic necessity to understand the nirvana is that understanding the anuppanna dhammas. So nirvana can be experienced in few ways by different yogis. It's one is the absence of the suffering that is going to happen. Another way is the absence of the defilements that are going to happen. These are the very basic explanations about nirvana. And then with that understanding, that is ultimate nature, unconditioned nature. That unconditioned nature can be seen something which is permanent, freed from suffering, not with realities that have no essence, like the anatta realities. Nibbana is anatta reality, but I'm talking about the conditioned anatta realities. So likewise, other than the two basic characteristics, absence of defilements, absence of suffering. So these are the very basic two characteristics of the real, the great Nibbana, I would call. So beyond that, so for that, we have to have an understanding about, first we have to have an understanding, clear understanding about what are the non-arisen defilements and what are the non-arisen suffering. Then as secondary trait, one may understand Nirvana as a permanent thing, Nirvana as something unmixed with suffering, and Nirvana as something not with non-self conditioned realities. So, and also some other, like if we go into the 40 methods of Vipassana, he may see it as a non-disease and so forth. But the basic two characteristics are the non-arisen of absence of suffering, or the non-arising of suffering, or the absence or the non-arising of defilements. So, yeah. Then when we come into the absence of defilements in our day-to-day life, in the Theravada tradition, we put it into the Vikambana Nirvana or Tadanga Nirvana. That is the peace that we have with our practice. The peace that we have with our practice. Yeah. So that is how we categorize the experience of Nirvana. A good practitioner would surely experience the Tadanga and Vishkambana Nirvana at certain levels.
Yeah, but now when you say Padasamina Bhikkaviti, Tangana Tugiri, Bhakti, Tangpati, things like that. So the brightness or the lightness of mind also can be treated as Nirvana? Kind of, I mean, you know, just like an example kind of.
The mind itself is not considered as Nirvana. The pure mind itself is not considered as Nirvana. The freedom, because of the pure mind, the freedom or the tranquil state which it is in is called the Nirvana. I'll explain this in the Asankata lesson. I'll distinguish what is the Chitta, what is the pure Chitta, and what is the Tadanga Nirvana, and so forth. I'll come into that explanation detail. Wish you all the best, and may this merit help through prolongation of the Buddha's teaching for a longer period. Buddha sasanang chirantittatu, Buddha sasanang chirantittatu, Buddha sasanang chirantittatu, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.